Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest, my patient guest tonight, because we've had some technical difficulties all on my end, is Anthony Johnson. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Scott.
Why don't you tell the folks a little bit about yourself?
My name is Anthony Johnston. I'm a writer primarily of comic books and video games. Comics include books like Wasteland, The Fuse, and Daredevil. Video games include games like Dead Space, Shadow of Mordor, and Zombie U. I also recently became a podcaster and started a podcast on this very network, The Incomparable, called Unjustly Maligned, the show for people who go against the grain, where every week a guest chooses something that everybody hates but they think is brilliant and try to persuade me and the audience why it is brilliant.
And I will, depending on when this comes out and when the episode we will be recording shortly of your podcast comes out, I will either be on or have been on as you're listening to this. So check it out. If you can't get enough Scott and Anthony together, there's another avenue for that. It's very exciting. But I won't be
because there's so much of it already.
That's right. You just can't get it. What I probably will not be talking, well, I definitely won't be talking about on Anthony's podcast is Star Trek, because Star Trek is not unjustly maligned. Everybody, as we all know, loves Star Trek. Perhaps if I loved Voyager, perhaps we would talk about that, but I don't. So that won't be what we'll be talking about. But today, we're going to be talking about Star Trek. In particular, a Deep Space Nine episode. But before we get into that, Anthony, would you consider yourself... I feel like I know the answer to this question already for some reason. But would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I am that most elusive and frustrating beast, like so many other people who've been on your show, the casual Star Trek fan. I grew up watching it as a child in the late 70s and early 80s with my mother, actually, who was a fan. Well, she was a fan of Leonard Nimoy, mostly. And so I became a fan of Star Trek as a child and watched it with her. And again, like so many others of our generation, I spent hours practicing my eyebrow waggle in the mirror after watching Leonard Nimoy do his turn as Mr. Spock. It wasn't in constant rerun in the UK, like it was in sort of... There was that old legend about, because of syndication, somewhere in the world, there is always... an episode of the original series showing. That wasn't the case in the UK, but it was still on quite a bit. It used to get rerun quite a lot. And then, of course, in the late 80s, when I think I was about 17, I think, The Next Generation started. And so I enjoyed that, watched that, until about halfway through its run when I got bored. I've seen all of the movies at least once, some of them more than, but all of them at least once, including the new ones. I like the reboot. I think J.J. Abrams has done a very good job, even though the plots make absolutely no sense whatsoever. I watched some of Enterprise, not as a sort of weekly loyal viewer, but just because it was on, seemed to be frequently on whenever I would turn the telly on. Yeah, I saw a couple of episodes of Voyager. And that's pretty much it, actually. And that's pretty much it. So, but I've enjoyed most, you know, I consider Star Trek to be something I will happily sit down and watch, certainly. But I certainly would never win, you know, a trivia contest about Star Trek or anything.
And you don't seek out Star Trek when you're bored.
No.
You don't turn on the BBC.
I am more,
That's all you can watch there.
Yeah, that's all we have. I am unfortunately more of a Star Wars guy. I'm afraid I'm in the John Siracusa style.
Oh, misguided. Well, that's okay. Well, J.J. Abrams is bridging the fandoms of Star Wars and Star Trek by taking over both franchises.
Absolutely, yes.
As he slowly takes over the entire world. And we can look forward to seeing much lens flare in the new Star Wars movie, I assume, if any of the Star Trek movies are to go by. Although I will say, for some reason, well, I know why, in Star Trek kind of fandom, the new reboot movies are a little controversial because obviously they're taking the characters we know and love and redoing them for modern time, and some people just don't like change. I, of course, think that they're fun, and even though, like you said, the plots really don't make any sense. It's just a fun ride. I think the characters, the cast is great. They kind of get the spirit of the original series, but upgrade it. But, you know, to each his own. I'm not here to tell people what they like.
I come from the world of comics. Like, I get fandom that doesn't like change, you know?
And you get constantly rebooting stuff.
Oh, right, exactly, yeah.
Just start over. We want to tell new stories. We don't want to be burdened by years and years of this history.
Exactly.
Which, you know, makes sense. It's freeing. There's a lot of Star Trek that if you start a new series or a movie, there's a lot of, you know, nitpicky details that people can say. But, you know, the Kittimer Accords say that Romulans and Klingons don't show up until X, Y, Z, whatever. But if you reboot it, none of that matters.
You can ignore all of that, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's for free. But we're not here to talk about J.J. Abrams or reboots or Voyager or Enterprise or The Next Generation, but... Or even the original series. That really leaves us only one thing that we could be here to talk about, Deep Space Nine. Now, I noticed in your listing of series that you've seen, you didn't mention Deep Space Nine. So have you seen any episodes of Deep Space Nine?
That was very deliberate, and I'm glad you picked up on it. I mentioned John Siracusa earlier. In the style of Mr. Siracusa, I would like to make some opening remarks.
Goodness.
I have never seen an episode of Deep Space Nine before, but everyone I know and everyone who knows me tells me that it's the best series and that I personally would love it. You know, mm-hmm. Everybody says this is the one that you would like above all others because of just my own predilections. Those same people tell me that season one is pretty bad, but then isn't that true for every Star Trek?
Yes. Other than the original series.
It seems to always take them at least one season to figure out what they want to do, yeah. So I was glad that this is an episode from season three mm-hmm. that we're looking at. On the other hand, I also gather that Deep Space Nine was one of the few Treks to have a continuing arc. Mm-hmm. So clearly I am screwed in terms of continuity or knowing what the hell's going on. and in the spirit of this show, I did no reading up on the episode before watching. So I went
Excellent.
In... with only what I already know about Deep Space Nine, which frankly is almost nothing. So, yes, it's going to be fun.
Well, I'll tell, I mean, people who are listening to this already know the episode we're going to talk about, but it's Equilibrium, Deep Space Nine, episode 4 from season 3. And this is a Trill heavy episode, which leads me to ask you, what confused you most about this episode before we jump in?
Oh, absolutely. The whole symbiont Trill stuff, without doubt, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although I was also very confused and disappointed that the captain fella wasn't yet a bearded Baldy.
That's true. This is
because I thought that that happened quite early on. I could have sworn people had told me that that happened between, like, it was like Riker's beard. It was a season one, season two thing. But apparently not.
No, it takes a little while. I think maybe late season three, early season four, Avery Brooks gets rid of his hair, gets a goatee, and starts...
And looks 1,000,000% better.
He does. He does indeed. And this episode is interesting in that I think it has all... Well, Miles O'Brien's not in it. And Garrick is not in it. But everybody else is in it, although they don't really do much. Like, Quark has one line, and everybody kind of shows up at the very beginning scene where Commander Sisko is cooking food for folks.
Yeah, there are lots of walk-ons, aren't there, for just, oh, you're here, you're in the cast, here, say a line.
Exactly. You're contractually obligated to be in this episode. Yeah. So here you go. You can talk about, you can stir the souffle, Odo, but that's all you really need to do.
And by the way, for the pedants in the audience, I know you can't have 1,000,000%, but you also can't time travel by flying really fast around a star. So,
what?
You know, swings and roundabouts.
This is news to me. I will have to cancel my afternoon plans. But all right, well, let's. So yes, the Trill thing. I thought as I was watching this, because I knew this was your first episode of Deep Space Nine. I thought to myself, one, is this a good introduction to Deep Space Nine? And two, if I didn't know anything about Deep Space Nine, would I even get what this episode was about? And I think you do, but it's very, I imagine, quite confusing in the beginning because they keep talking about Trills and symbiotes and, you're like, well, they don't really tell you what that means until a good portion of the episode. And of course, regular Deep Space Nine viewers will know that Jadzia Dax is a Trill and she has a little symbiote in her who holds the memories of its 7 previous, or are there more hosts? And so the central mystery in this episode is Jadzia's having these hallucinations and she doesn't understand what's going on. And spoiler alert, we find out that there is an 8th host, that the memories were suppressed, but the memory block is waning and she's remembering. And so bad things are happening to her.
Yeah, I mean, all of it, the whole Trill symbiont stuff was kind of adequately explained, and I don't have a problem with stories that wait to explain what's going on to you. A lot of my own fiction actually is in that vein, and I've been criticized by people for that, for like, you know, what the hell is going on? I'm like, be patient. So I don't have a problem with that at all. And it was mostly explained. I think everything you need to know to understand the logic of the episode, such as it is there in the episode. So that, yes, that was fine. Not everything that you need to know to get the emotional weight of the episode is there. But of course, that's really difficult to get in something that is clearly, you know, something that plays on a character's long-term, you know, arc, and the fact that this character has been in the story for a long time. So that's very difficult, and I sort of sympathise with that. But I did feel as if there were some things in that very 90s Star Trek fashion, some things were kind of glossed over that you think you should probably give a bit more emotional heft to that, I think. You know, people sort of happily wander around doing things that are really outlandish without reacting, you know, as if they are outlandish. Well, which is a very Star Trek thing.
Because it's not outlandish there, I suppose. I don't know.
I guess.
But why don't we... We'll jump into the synopsis part of the show. As I said, it starts off with a cast of our favorite characters all gathering in Commander Sisko's rooms, I guess, and having a little meal, I suppose. Well, Commander Sisko, Benjamin Sisko, he's cooking the meal, which is weird, only because apparently his quarters does not have a kitchen, so he set up a bunch of, you know, like burners and things in the middle of his living room.
Like a camping trip.
Yes, to make this complicated meal that he's making.
But why would anybody's quarters in Star Trek have a kitchen when they have replicators?
That is true. So maybe he replicated all of this cooking equipment so that he could cook it himself.
I feel that cooking in the Star Trek universe has got to be, you know, a bit like... a bit like, funnily enough, music, which we'll come to shortly, in our world, in that it is sort of, it's a leisure pursuit that is never, it's not necessary. And so it's something he clearly takes enjoyment and pride in it. And so, you know, you feel it has to be something that people do purely for the love of it. Whereas here, obviously, we have to cook to, you know, to eat.
That's true. And one imagines that, so he's cooking what, some kind of blackened fish and some beets and a souffle, and they're on a deep space station far from Earth, where all of these ingredients come from. So one imagines he just replicated all the ingredients, and he is, as you said, he takes joy in preparing it. So he's preparing it, where he could have just replicated up whatever his recipe is, but
didn't. Well, and that is the joy of cooking. You know, I'm not laying claim to being a great chef or anything, but I'm a keen cook myself, and the joy of it is preparing everything and putting it together. The eating is just kind of, that's a byproduct, if you like. It's the preparation that gives you the most joy.
I enjoy the eating myself, but... and this is where we find out a little tidbit about Benjamin Sisko that comes up a lot in later episodes. He learned how to cook in his father's restaurant in New Orleans. So,
wait, does that become a big thing?
It doesn't become a big thing, but his father becomes a character. He spends some time back on Earth at his father's restaurant. So it comes up again. It's a little character nugget that they mine again and again.
Hang on, and wasn't Picard's father, didn't he run a vineyard?
He did. The Picard family has a vineyard, yes.
Okay, so what about Kirk's father?
I think Kirk's father,
short order cook?
Possibly. All famous starship captains' parents were involved in the food industry in some way. I think we've cracked the code.
By Jove, we've got it.
And so, who is at this party? We've got Odo, we've got Kira, we've got Bashir, and of course Jake, who is Benjamin Sisko's son. And they're hanging out, talking about how much Bashir hates beets, and Sisko assures him that he just hasn't had the right kind of beets, which, as someone who has many strong dislikes in food, nothing is more annoying than someone telling me, oh, you just don't like this because you haven't had the right kind.
Oh, yeah.
No,
I had that with Guinness. I can't stand Guinness. And I had people always telling me, oh, that's just because you haven't had it done properly. You need to go to Ireland and drink it. So I went to Ireland and I tried Guinness and I nearly vomited. It was vile.
See, there you go. We're on the same page. So Sisko, a tiny bit of a jerk to Bashir, who does not like beets. But then, so this is all set up so that Dax can come in. And she's, you know, been busy at work realigning sensors or something. I don't know. Whatever people do. And, you know, whatever they do other time. I don't know what they do. And she is exhausted.
You don't know, what hope is there for the rest of us?
Well, you know, she does something science-y. And she comes in and just kind of walks around and helps herself to Jake's keyboard, which wasn't...
Is there anything worse than the person who walks into your home, picks up your bloody guitar and starts playing, and then they turn out to be some kind of virtuoso? You're just like, oh, go away.
And that's exactly what happens. She picks up, before she says it, before she actually starts playing, she's like, oh, I don't have any musical ability whatsoever, and none of my previous hosts did. And then she starts playing this lovely little tune, and everybody, Bashir in particular, is like, oh, that's nice, what is it? And she says, quiet! I'm playing, Julian.
I'm trying to create here.
Exactly. And she's, Julian's like, whoa. And so he walks away. And she is obsessed with playing this tune over and over again. And it is unlike Dax to snap at Julian Bashir. Usually she's an easygoing kind of lady. So we know
that impression. I didn't get from the episode, actually. Like, joking aside, that's something that I think maybe they should have spent more time laying the seeds of, because of what happens to her in this episode and because of that very first interaction. I kind of got the impression that she was a very sort of clipped, buttoned up, you know, not impatient, I guess, not impolite, but impatient, abrupt kind of person.
Yes, and so I think what they were doing, because they didn't have a lot of time, although I think they probably could have trimmed some stuff and established for new viewers that Dax is not kind of short-tempered as she is in this episode, is, you know, just doing a quick shorthand for everyone who's watched and think, whoa, this is not how Dax usually handles things. Because she, like I said, she's kind of laid back. She kind of goes with the flow. She's always up for some fun. She's, of course, a Starfleet officer, and very smart and very good at her job. But, you know, she's kind of even-keeled. So this is a big change in her personality that they hint at. And then they ratchet up, of course, throughout the rest of the episode. But if you don't know that, then you don't get that.
Yeah, that didn't come across at all, no.
Which is unfortunate. And then later on, so that's the teaser with the big, oh, Dax is acting strangely. Or, if you're new, this is the only episode of Deep Space Nine you've seen, that Dax is kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And so then we see her playing chess with Sisko in his little commander's office, and she is distracted and humming this song again. And there's a funny little moment when Sisko's like, could you just stop humming that song? And she's like, I can't get it out of my mind. And then he checks her. She's very upset by this, and she accuses him of cheating, which is also unlike Dax. But then says that one of her previous hosts, who was Sisko's, one of Sisko's best friends, always thought he was a cheat as well, which was kind of mean. And then you would think she would flip over the chessboard. This is a minor detail.
I was waiting for the table flip. Yeah,
but she doesn't. She like kind of pushes,
she sweeps instead.
Yeah, she sweeps all of the pieces towards Sisko and leaves, which I thought was an interesting choice. If I were the actor, I would have thrown something, but she kind of just sweeps them off and leaves.
Maybe the sets weren't, you know, maybe there was a danger that if she tried to flip something, it'd break the table in half.
I did think about that because they had that camera angled so that sweeping would be the most effective thing. So they must have had...
Right, drive them towards the camera, yeah.
Exactly. They must have had some kind of discussion about it, but I just thought it was weird. And, of course, if there's nothing I don't do, it's obsess over tiny details that they probably spent like 2 seconds thinking about. But
the whole thing, I will say, and this really struck me in these first 10 minutes, but it continued to throughout the episode. It still feels very surprisingly to me, after everything I'd heard about Deep Space Nine, it still felt very Next Generation. Mm-hmm. The way it was shot, the speed of it, it's very slow, and it genuinely feels dated. And I don't necessarily mean that in a disparaging way, just a surprising way, considering that it was made, you know, after the sort of heyday of Next Generation. And something like X-Files was contemporary with this. And yet, if you looked at them, you know, just production style, they couldn't be more different. And that just surprised me a little. I think after everything everybody had told me about Deep Space Nine, I expected something a bit faster moving, a bit more darker and more dramatic and more urgent. And instead, it felt it had that next generation of like, oh, everything's fine. It's the future. We're all fine. Everything's chill. Apart from, you know, somebody occasionally going, I feel pain. But, you know, it just didn't have that sense of dramatic urgency to it that I was expecting.
And so... And you mentioned that Deep Space Nine has arcs, which it does. This is season three is still when they are kind of like, well, let's do a lot of standalone episodes. Season four is when it really shifts into kind of big arcs, and they have the Dominion War, and it gets dark.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think season three has many good episodes, but it is
this wasn't a bad episode at all. I thought overall it was quite a good episode. I was just surprised that it felt so early 90s.
Right. And it doesn't feel like I'm sure everyone was telling you, you know, Deep Space Nine is dark and these characters make big decisions, and
exactly,
it's unlike any other Star Trek you've seen, which is true for later seasons, but this particular episode is kind of
not so much.
No, and it's a run-of-the-mill Star Trek episode. I like this episode, but it's not like the shining example of a Deep Space Nine episode. It's a fine Star Trek episode, but not so much dark. Although Jadzia Dax has to deal with some dark things, but she still has to be angry with a lot of people before we get to figure out why she's so angry with people. So she goes off to the Replimat, which is, you know, where you get your lunch on Deep Space Nine. And Kira comes over and says, hey, Dax, what's up? And Dax is like, oh, I bet Sisko sent you to talk to me to apologize. And Dax is, what's her name? Kira says, no, I'm just, you know, checking on you to see if you're okay. And they have Dax escalates very quickly to, you know, you should leave. And Kira's like, I'm not going to leave. And Dax is like, well, then I'm leaving. And Kira gets up and puts her hands on Dax. And Dax is like, you better take your hands off of me before I go beat you up. And then Kira does. And Dax says, that's the first smart thing you've done all day. And she leaves, which is unlike Dax.
Yeah, see, again, I didn't know that was out of character for her. And I was half expecting a sort of one of those beautifully slowly shot Next Generation style fight scenes that we had in Star Trek, where everything's medium shot and the actors are just sort of dancing around tables.
Yes, perhaps in soft focus, since they're two women.
until Riker decides to, like, fly kick somebody. You
know? That's right. But sadly, there's no fisticuffs. She just storms off and into a hallucination, basically. So she walks it across the promenade into a very dark, unusually dark area of a public space. But we find out she's hallucinating. And she sees a guy with a mask who takes off a mask. And there's a mask underneath. There are masks all the way down. And she doesn't know what's going on. She runs away to get away from him. And she runs into Quark, who has his one line about, hey, are you feeling all right? And then she leaves.
There's nobody on this space station, is there? I was astounded at how few people there were.
Extras cost a lot of money. So there is as she's walking through the promenade, there are a bunch of people, like some people looking at luggage and fighting, maybe one or two people walking past. But then she quickly goes into a deserted area.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most people we see in a single shot in the entire show.
Yes, it is true, because then they quickly leave Deep Space Nine. Because Dax has gone crazy, basically. She hasn't gone crazy. But she's having these hallucinations. She is obsessed with this music. So she goes to Dr. Bashir and tells him, oh, I'm having these hallucinations. He does some, you know, medical things and finds out that her, isobaramine levels are falling. And if you have bad isobaramine levels, your body could reject the symbiote, and if the symbiote is rejected, both the symbiote and the host die, so that's no good. So they need to go to Trill, because only Trill, the Trill homeworld, can solve this problem. But in the meantime, they have the computer looking for the music to figure out what that music is. I always question Star Trek's and the writers of Star Trek in particular, their knowledge of computers and how they work. Because it takes the computers a really long time to figure out this music.
It seems to take the computer days just to locate us. You know, we have Shazam, right. For heaven's sake.
It should take like 3 seconds for the computer. Yeah, it's like, oh, look, yeah. It's this obscure trill composer guy. Yeah. Mystery solved. But no, it takes them a while. And so they go on to the Defiant. There's this nice scene with...
Is the Defiant the sort of shuttlecraft type thing that they use?
Yes.
So this was something I was quite surprised at. It was that there is not a single full external shot of Deep Space Nine in the episode.
That is true.
Now, I mean, obviously, they assume that if you're watching the episode, you've sat through the opening titles.
Right, and you've seen it.
But at no point in the episode itself is there an actual decent external shot of the station, which really surprised me.
I think it's, once again, budget.
Well, but I assume they use stock shots. It's like the Enterprise in orbit around a planet. It's like, you know, they don't use a different model shot every time, do they?
And as they show the Defiant in orbit around the Trill homeworld like 3 times, and it's the same shot every time.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that just surprised me a little for especially because this plot point is kind of, oh, we are leaving the station to go and visit the homeworld, is such a big thing. I just expected them to make more of it.
No, they just hop on the Defiant, which is a full starship. It's a little starship. It's a new class of ship. I think it's the Defiant class, actually.
Okay. So it's not a shuttle. It is actually a starship.
It is actually a starship.
Right.
It has a cloaking device and all kinds of crazy weaponry, which they don't use in this episode at all, but just so you know. It also has bunk beds, which makes sense because it's a warship, I suppose. But
bunk beds with no linen.
That's I made that note, too. Because I thought it was so weird.
Yeah, it's like, wait, where are the bed sheets?
Yeah, so Jadzia is having trouble sleeping, so she goes to check with Bashir, who is lounging in his pajamas in his bunk with no sheets and a weird pillow. And he's reading his iPad, and she comes in. They have this nice little chat. I thought it was a nice little moment between the two. And she says she is afraid of doctors. And he says, oh, I was always afraid of doctors as well, and I decided to become one, blah, blah, blah. They have a nice moment. And he says, you know, if you are having trouble sleeping, you can sleep here. And at first I thought he was because Bashir has always been kind of enamored with Dax, so I thought he was...
That did come across, yeah.
Yeah, it was, and I thought, well, that's a little creepy. But then he quickly said, you can have the top bunk. And I was like, okay, that's better. Thank you for not ruining this. Because they had that nice little moment, and if he had said, you know, hubba hubba...
And then suddenly turns lecherous.
Yeah. Exactly, that wouldn't have been nice. But he didn't, so good on you, Bashir. And there's another cute little moment where she's like, oh, well, if you really don't mind, can I have the bottom bunk? And I thought that was funny. And so they go to sleep with no sheets. Apparently in the future, you don't need sheets. Everybody has pajamas. Nobody has sheets. I don't understand. But they arrive at the Trill homeworld. And
they arrive at one of the worst map paintings I have ever seen in my life. Crikey.
Just great.
The shuttle launch, sorry, not shuttle, Defiant ship launch shot that we just saw was really good quality.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, wow, okay, that looks really good, for sort of a mid-period Star Trek show. And then this map painting is just awful.
They have to go to the Symbiosis Council or Commission, the Symbiosis Commission, to... get I skipped over an important thing. So on the Defiant, Dax has another is this where this happens? No. Oh no, that's later. She has another this is okay. I'm mixing up the flow of this episode, even though I just watched it.
I'm afraid my notes literally leap from the terrible map painting to a random guy putting his hand on her abdomen and going, oh, that's not good. That's not what you want.
Yes, that does happen. And I thought that was also creepy. So she's on the Defiant. Then they go down to the Symbiosis Council Commission. The Symbiosis Commission's like, oh, this is not good. Take some of these drugs. Jadzia is like, oh, do I have to stay here? And the doctor says, no, Dr. Bashir can administer the thing. And so she's like, okay, they go back to the Defiant. They don't spend any time I thought it was weird. They beam down several times to the Trill homeworld. You would think that they would just like get a hotel room or something.
Just stay there, yeah. Yeah.
They always go back to Defiant. I don't know why. It's the Trill are part of the Federation. It's a friendly planet. They don't need to stay on their warship, but they do. and so they go back to the Defiant. Jadzia is like, I don't know why we're back here when I could be showing you like these ice cliffs or something. And Bashir says, well, no, you need to rest. So off she goes to rest, where she has another hallucination where she is meeting yet again this masked man who has many masks. And then she hallucinates some other Trill coming to kind of take her away, and she starts fighting them. And then she snaps out of her hallucination, and she is about to punch Dr. Bashir, who is quite concerned that her hallucinations are getting worse.
Which is, that's a really weird sort of move from the hallucination to real life, because that's a fairly common device. You're like, oh, I'm fighting my enemies, mm-hmm. and then it turns out, you know, you wake up from the hallucination and you've punched all your friends. We've seen that in many shows, many movies. It's a very common device. But when she wakes up from this one, the doctor is the only person there. And there were two people dragging her away, and she punched one of them. And you're like, well, who did she punch then?
she punched some ensign that you don't need to see.
He's just lying out of shot on the floor. Exactly. It's not important.
He's bleeding out. He was wearing a red shirt. Nobody cares. And so they go back to the hospital. They beam back down to the Trill homeworld. Also, I thought to myself, why didn't they just stay in the Symbiosis Commission? Because they kind of, you know, they're the experts on this, but they don't. And the doctor there is like, oh, her whatever levels are rising too quickly, which is probably responsible for the hallucinations, so let's cut back on it. And so they think, well, that's kind of weird. And Bashir thinks, well, maybe you need therapy, Dax. And Dax is like, no, I don't need therapy. I need to go visit the Guardians. And everybody's like, who the hell are the Guardians? And she says, oh, well, those are the people who apparently live underground all year round, tending the pools in which the symbiotes live, which is very strange. But
is this the first time the Guardians have been mentioned in Deep Space Nine, then?
Yes.
Right.
This is the first time we're on the Trill homeworld.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of new information in this episode. So they go
including down. Including that their head doctor clearly doesn't have the faintest idea what she's doing.
It's true. She does not seem like a great doctor.
She's just like watching an episode of House. It's like, oh, let's try this. Oh, no, she's dying. Let's try this instead.
But there is a reason why she's doing that, though. We find out the big twist at the end, which isn't all that shocking. But, you know, which is, well, we'll get to it. I don't know why I'm worrying about ruining this episode because everyone's probably watched it, but whatever.
Spoilers from 20 years ago.
Exactly. So they go down to the underground caves where they have these pools full of symbiotes and Trills who are unjoined to symbiotes but are dedicated to caring for symbiotes. Walk around with like weed whackers and measure the nutrients in the pools. And Dax warns that they are not used to talking to people, so don't be alarmed.
That's one of those lines where you look at it and you think, yeah, probably should have edited that out, because she specifically says, don't be surprised if he ignores you. They're not used to talking to strangers. And, like, for the rest of the episode, the guy just happily talks to anybody who approaches him.
He doesn't. He is not socially awkward at all. They have this one little moment where Bashir says, could I ask you what you're doing? And he says, yes. And that's it.
Yeah. Ha, 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 ha.
Ha, ha. That's funny. And then he says, well, what are you doing? And he tells him. And that's it. It turns out that he should really be the doctor in the Symbiosis Commission, because he seems to know a lot about these symbiotes. So much so that he can identify Dax without knowing who she is by, I guess, feeling the symbiote from several meters away. And this is when he walks over and he says, do you mind? And then he creepily puts his hand on Dax's stomach.
And says, oh, well, that's not good at all. And that's really not what you want to hear, is it?
No. Especially when you're underground in a cave.
With some random guy who you've never met before with a dodgy tricorder on his belt.
Yep, saying, that's not so good. And she, of course, Dax is concerned. And she says, well, what's wrong? And he says, well, I need to run some tests or something. And so they walk off without, anyone saying anything. And Bashir and Sisko, who are there, just leave.
Yeah, just go. Yeah.
I thought it was very strange. I mean, I know Jack, of course, Dax is an adult and she can take care of herself. But you would think, oh, well, call us when you're done or something. We'll see you later. No, they don't even say that. They just leave.
Just go, yeah.
It was weird. Dax, luckily,
but
this
again,
guy,
it's that Star Trek thing, isn't it? Like, oh, it'll be fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. It's the future. It'll all be fine. Don't worry. Unless you're wearing a red shirt. But otherwise, it'll be fine.
That's right. and then she beams back. So it turns out that he's not a subterranean serial killer because Jax comes back to the Defiance. And he has said that, you know, he thinks it may be something with one of the hosts, possibly not Jadzia, but some other host. There's something going on. But meanwhile, on the ship, Bashir and Sisko have been hard at work staring at, I guess, the search results from the computer, because the computer finds out who wrote this music, finally, after like 3 days of searching. And it's some dude named Joran Bilar, who was dead 86 years ago. And Dax doesn't...
Dun, dun, dun.
I know. We see a picture. Dax doesn't recognize him. As soon as she sees the picture, she gets another hallucination of standing in a doctor's office, and then the masked man basically kills the doctor, and he says, he left me no choice. And Judzi is like, who are you? And she removes the mask, but there's bright light, and then in her non-hallucination way, she is in neural shock. And so they have to go back to the Trill homeworld again.
There's a lot of shoe leather in this episode, isn't there?
There is. And they try to stabilize her. The doctor down at the Symbiosis Commission is like, well, maybe it's the wormhole.
It's lupus.
That's right. I don't know, something. So they're like, okay, well, we will leave you to randomly try medicine on our friend as you try to save her. We're going to go back underground and talk to that creepy guy because he seemed to know what was going on. They go underground, talk to that guy. That guy's like, what? I don't even know what you're talking about. That was just a theory. I've got to go scan some pools. To which Sisko and Bashir immediately think there's some kind of conspiracy.
Well, to be fair, the guy was acting. I mean, it wouldn't take a genius to sort of see the way he reacted to their questioning and go, yeah, he's clearly hiding something.
He was lying. It's true. And so they go back to the Defiance again, because apparently on the Trill homeworld, there are no computers that they can use. And so they run some, they look at the record of this Joran fellow. It seems like it was deleted. Some parts of it were deleted because all of a sudden, Julian Bashir, in addition to being a doctor, is an expert on, computer forensics.
Suddenly he's an expert on, like, file hashing and stuff. And you're like, hang on a minute.
He is very smart. And so they figure out, oh, they deleted a bunch of stuff. He has the day he died is the same day that one of Dax's hosts got the symbiote, so something's going on. They call up his brother. His brother is like, that was 86 years ago. I don't really remember a lot. I'm a cranky old Trill.
And then proceeds to remember everything in great detail.
He does, indeed. He was like, I don't know. I don't remember anything. But my brother did call me and tell me that he was joined, so I know that they're lying about that. I don't remember the name of the Trill or the symbiote, but he certainly had it, and he probably killed that doctor that they accused him of killing.
that was a kind of like, well, it wouldn't surprise me if he did kill that doctor. Yeah. No, this is your brother.
He was always a hothead, apparently. And so, armed with this, Bashir and Sisko do some off-camera sleuthing, apparently, because then they go back to the Symbiosis Commission and basically confront the doctor. And the doctor's about to take the Trill host, the Trill symbiote from Jadzia and implant it into a new host, which, of course, would kill Jadzia, but save the symbiote. And it would seem that... Now, the Trill culture is kind of weird to me, because it seems like the whole... extent of the culture is around supporting these symbiotes, who are also, they are, conscious, living, intelligent beings. But so are the Trill themselves. So
right, so are the people that they inhabit, yeah.
So it seems like an interesting dilemma that they briefly touch on, but I think they probably could have spent a little more time pondering that dynamic instead of this wacky mystery that they are going about. But anyway, so they find out that Julian Bashir and Sisko have deduced that this Joran fellow, who was unstable and had a bit of a temper, should have probably been kicked out of the very extensive host training that they have, because only a very small percentage of Trill can be a host, right? Or can they? Because it turns out that even though Jaren is clearly unsuitable, he was able to be a host for 6 months before he killed somebody. And so that made the Symbiosis Commission actually study what the traits of a good host would be, or like the biological necessity of a host, which you would think they would look into before, but apparently never did.
You would think that that's something they would have down by now, yeah. Yeah. On the other hand, I actually didn't have a problem with the idea that they haven't looked further into it because of politics. You know, the idea that, well, this is the way we've always done it, and therefore this is the way we will always do it. Because, let's be honest, that is much more common than most of us would like in many aspects of the modern world. So, in some ways, I kind of didn't have a problem with the idea that they've been doing this for thousands of years and never, nobody's ever actually said, well, hang on a second, what about...
And they probably, and in the way it's human nature and Trill nature, I imagine, you think, well, we've been doing it for so long. Clearly, hundreds of years ago or thousands of years ago, they probably looked into it. And this
somebody must have looked into it. Yeah,
it's
so we
obvious.
Don't need to.
Turns out nobody did until 86 years ago when they found out, lo and behold, 50% of the Trill population could be happily host one of these symbiotes. Sadly, they don't have that many symbiotes. They don't say how many they have, but they must have a very small fraction of the symbiotes to the Trill homeworld population. Well, so what did you think? This is your first taste of Deep Space Nine, probably not the most emblematic of certainly the later seasons of Deep Space Nine, but a very Star Trek-y Deep Space Nine episode. What did you think of it?
I think it teaches us that nostalgia ain't what it used to be. I'm glad, actually, that we had this conversation, because I have many times contemplated watching Deep Space Nine, because everybody tells me it's the one I would enjoy the most. But after having seen this, I'm now thinking if I do, I'll start at season four.
That might be a good idea. Maybe start later seasons. I don't know exactly when the Dominion comes
into
the
picture. Well, there are seven seasons, aren't there? So that's only three seasons to watch. That's not so bad.
So, start at the fourth season. Things start rapidly happening. The fifth, the sixth and seventh season bring it up. The seventh season, spoiler alert, Jadzia Dax dies and there's a new Dax. So, which is sad, but there you go. All right. Well,
yeah, I thought it was fine, but yeah, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch another episode of this same style.
You don't have a burning desire to sit down at season one, episode one, and just start.
Absolutely not.
All right. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for being on.
That was my pleasure.
Next on Random Trek, the classic original series episode, The Devil in the Dark.